In basic training, we were all asked the same question. Why are you here? Why did you join the army? And in an unsurprising fashion, as you went down the line, you heard person after person answer within a range of similar expected answers. Some said they joined out of patriotism. Some joined because they wanted to fight for their country. Some people decided that they wanted a career following in the footsteps of their family members. And the way that we would approach a question like this, standing back and from the position, but from the benefit of hindsight, is to start by separating why a person chooses to join the military, or actually in our day and age where the line between combatant and non-combatant is becoming ever more so blurred, where media and books written to family members or men inspire people to live in a warlike passion, or in a world where the avenues of attack are much more ambiguous, we should ask the question for each and every one of us, each and one of ourselves, is why does a person go off to war versus should a person go off to war? The first deals with the motivations and intents of the individual. Perhaps they are looking for career, they are looking for financial stability, they are interested most likely, or what we tend to hear most often when you dig into the intents of a person, is that while they may cite patriotism, what it typically does conceal is a deeper motivation to prove that he is a man, or to undergo a rite of passage that may have been denied to him by his society. And I ask this question on this channel, and I ask this question in this podcast format, in order to incite the question in each of us. What are the reasons why we would engage in warfare? What are the right justifications for it? And in order to consider these things, we must set ourselves apart from the kind of way that these questions are typically answered, like self-defense or cultural appropriation or something of that sense. Rather, we need to dig a little bit deeper and find the courage to admit, at least to ourselves, why we as individuals would consider doing something that would otherwise be relegated to warfare. So the question of why a person, an individual, would go off to war will be set aside as we start engaging with some of the questions of whether or not somebody should. And this is the detailing of just war theory. I've actually just cracked open and started reading a book by Jeff McMahon called Killing in War by Oxford University Press. And it is an academic book of its format that raises the question in the, let's see, it's not even the foreword, it's just the very first page. Jeff McMahon goes on to say, killing a person is in general among the most seriously wrongful forms of action, yet most of us accept that it can be permissible to kill people on a large scale in war. That's going to be footnote one. It's not the footnote in the book. It's me for a footnote for this conversation. He goes on to say, does morality become more permissive in a state of war? Jeff McMahon argues that conditions in war make no difference to what morality permits, and that the justifications for killing people are the same in war as they are in other contexts, such as individual self-defense. This view is radically at odds with the traditional theory of the just war and has implications that challenge common sense views. McMahon argues, for example, that it is wrong to fight in a war that is unjust because it lacks a just cause. And so when we are engaging the question of whether or not an individual should engage in warfare, we are dealing in just war theory. And just war theory may sound or be oftentimes pontificated on by people who have no correlation to reality when it comes to these things. What we must understand is that even if we make excuses against academics far away, we ourselves are responsible for how we answer these questions. We might start with a kind of a binary. A person should fight in a war, therefore the war is justified, or a person should not fight in a war. The war itself is not justified. If the war is justified, a person should fight in it, or is permitted to fight in it. We exist in a world where we have the convenience of voluntary armies. But if the war itself is unjustified, we then can say with some clarity that there is no situation, no condition upon which the individual ought or is morally obligated, in a sense, to fight in the war. You, by even separating it into this binary question between a person should versus a person shouldn't, we unveil another layer to concerning the individual themselves. Now, starting with the first layer, a person should fight in a war or should a person fight in a war, we have an easier split. It's a much easier way to start, a much easier footing to establish, and then we're going to move on from there rather quickly. And so we can say with some certainty that if a person, or as we generally understand fighting in warfare to be voluntary, and I would add that to if you consider yourself to be a person capable of agency, if you are a thinking person, then there really is no scenario in which you are not voluntarily participating in warfare. If you are participating in warfare, even if it lands on your shores, you are still making the deliberate choice to participate. So we generally understand that a person should only fight in a war if it is voluntary, or it's at least the ideal is that it is voluntary. And wars, and only wars that are determined to be just, sufficiently meet the criteria upon which a person ought or should or is accepted to fight in war. So, however, the simplicity of it is, if the war is then unjustified, then there is no condition in which a person should fight in the war. This starts at the top of the first binary. First binary being, should a person, yes or no? And then that yes gets split or gets further clarified in, we know the conditions, are the conditions that we might consider in which a person is justified in participating in warfare begins with perhaps a sense of voluntarism. Now you're going to have to deal with agency and individuals' free will, but that the war must be justified in order for a person to be justified in participating in that war. But what happens? But that's like the simplest it gets. If we want to get more complicated, we should look at the inverse. Are there situations where a person should not fight in a war? So one of those is an easily granted aspect. It's that the war is unjustified. Yes, then a person should not fight in an unjustified war. If the war that is being waged or that you are considering is one, say, of genocide or that format of level of moral evil or malice, then we can easily say the answer is no. But what about in the other scenario where the war is justified, but the individual chooses not to participate? Is there a moral failing? We know that there is a moral failing if the war is unjustified, but somebody chooses to participate in it. But is it the same thing? Is it the inverse? Really, all that true? That it is the case that a person is immoral for refusing to participate in a justified war. This is the question that we end up being saddled with, burdened with in many small interactions and small considerations as we go throughout our day. And while we're using war as the avenue, what we are dealing with is the question of ethics, and that you might hear war. There are sins of commission, a person doing the thing, but then there are also sins of omission. And then in honor cultures, in honor cultures or in a system of honor, which considers it dishonorable for a person not to participate in something they ought to do, then one might say that choosing abdicating from fighting in a war that one is capable of participating in, as an assumption, by abdicating or choosing not to, a person is exhibiting cowardice. It is not like they are the only persons that are afraid. So there's some utility that we want to kind of ferret out and then segregate as well, which might be something like, if there's ever a situation, or because we are basically trying to answer the question, is there ever a situation where a person is wrong for deliberately not participating in a justified conflict? Now, war on a grand scale, war outside is extrapolated to the Western mind, where it's typically somebody else's problem, is easy to leave unconsidered. But when we think about things like self-defense or the right to bear arms, if we think about the way that we view ownership and responsibility to our community, that distant land problem suddenly becomes close shores with the waves crashing on our moral compass. So the utility that we want to ferret out and separate is that we recognize that there is a lack of utility in coercing an individual to participate in a war that is justified, even if it's against their will. And the utility might be, well, if they are a coward or they're just morally unwilling to be responsible or do the thing, then they are going to be the consequences will very likely be wrought upon their friends, their allies, the people they're working for, their team. There's that one scene near the end of, what's the movie? Saving Private Ryan, where there's the one character who's a bit of a coward, and he's unwilling to even walk up the stairs to kill the German who's killing his friends or his teammates. And in that scene, we might sympathize with his lack of courage, his fear, his terror of the battlefield, and ultimately his fear, because all that was demanded of him was to walk up and take a shot, and that's not it's certainly not the biggest ask. He's not expected himself to storm the beaches of Normandy or something. But that character who's depicted as a coward, because he's unwilling to even climb to the top of the stairs, it results in his teammates dying. And this is that utility argument, but we're focusing more on the ethical framework argument, the ethics argument at the core. We might say that there is a lack of utility in forcing somebody, coercing them to participate in a war that they are unwilling to participate in for demeanor, character, free will questions. And coercion becomes a difficult, or not a, coercion then enters the moral argument here by saying, we generally recognize that a person who voluntarily participates in a war is only doing so rightly if the war itself is justified and his motives, intentions, or justifications line up with that. For example, you can have a just war, a war that is entirely justified by whatever conditions that we have determined, but the individual may choose to participate in that war for our ulterior means. You could think of the bad guy infiltrating the ranks for the intent of turning a just war into an unjustified slaughter for the sake of fulfilling his own sense of malice. I want to go back and I want to continue to deal with that hard question. And that hard question is there such a condition where a person would be considered immoral for refusing to participate in a justified war? And this is where pacifists might have a heyday, or it might be more accurate to say this is the point at which one can separate a, let's just call it honest pacifist by, from, you can separate the honest pacifists from the dishonest ones. The strong pacifist will acknowledge the moral complications of his situation and still choose to bear the responsibilities of the consequences, whereas an immoral or a weak pacifist will simply claim the moral high ground regardless of whether or not its consequences ever exist. Another way of saying it is, you can tell a weak pacifist as somebody who is unwilling to call the police, or you can determine who is a weak pacifist by figuring out who is willing to call the police. Keyword here is, if you claim to be a pacifist but you call on other people to do violence on your behalf, then you are not a pacifist. So, going back one layer, back to the question at hand. What is the, is there a situation where a person is in the wrong for choosing to not fight in a justified war? This is where my ability to answer the question sort of dissolves. Because on the one hand, and this is one of those places where we find things living in tension. For example, I believe that a person who willingly or is unwilling to participate in a justified war might be considered a coward, especially if he is willing to claim the fruits of that war. If a war breaks out and a country is under attack and a certain amount of people who are capable choose to or voluntarily choose not to participate in the war, and those reasons are insufficient, I think there's something immoral there. However, by principle, I don't believe that one individual is fully capable of discerning that in another. We take it as a, we take it for, not granted, but we take it as a sort of maxim or a condition or a heuristic that those involuntary, unwilling to participate in the warfare, we give them the benefit of the doubt that they have either a moral conflict, something like a crisis of conscience, or they believe that they are incapable of being of any assistance whatsoever. And then where we oftentimes figure out where the morality of those individuals lie is in the time after the warfare or in the time set aside. So when the fighting happens, it is important for those who are willing to morally engage in the subject, push aside those who are unwilling to participate so as to see the circumstance concluded. Now, when that time is passed, this is where you get your scenario of a warrior in a garden, which comes to my criticism of the colloquial use of the phrase, it is better to be a warrior in a garden than it is to be a gardener in a war. We'll call this a sidebar. So as you're listening, we will resume to the content here in a minute, but this is a sidebar. The phrase, it is better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war, is on its nose hard to argue with. Of course, I would rather be in a situation where I have it and not need it than need it and not have it, it being those skills, that capability. However, what I will argue is that both of these scenarios described, gardener in a war, warrior in a garden, are two different types of hell. Because for the warrior, or for the gardener in the war, you are useless on the battlefield, or at least so to speak, according to the metaphor. But is it not the same to be said about the warrior caught in a garden? We want to have this idea of Zen and peace and whatever, but when the treads of industry grind everything to dust and the soldier has been built up in his time, partially by his own choice and partially by the influence of his society, to become something, that they once hailed as their, in some sense, their savior, and they're fighting on their behalf, the hero, then it is an entirely different type of hell for the person who is capable of war to be left alone, to be discarded after the conflict. And so why I bring this up, and why I bring it up is within a society, it is a perpetual tension to create a space of belonging and veneration or capability. Even veneration is the wrong word, but an acceptable place of participation for the warrior in our time of peace. And there's a social like interaction that has to happen here, and it's not very clear. And in fact, we've oftentimes been very bad at it. Whereas the example of being a gardener in a war is really, really quite simple. Think of the story of Samwise Gamgee was written in Lord of the Rings, was written after World War I. And World War I was not really a war of heroism. It was a very perilous industrial war. And so for J.R.R. Tolkien to be writing that kind of character into one of his books, into the position of a hero, is one of the reasons why that novel has carried on so long through the last 100 years. So back to the question, back to the deal, the issue, the question of just war, and whether or not a person chooses to go to war is different than whether or not a person should go to war, or on how those two things are different. So I think when these questions are asked of people, when these questions that are questions of a similar sort, why do you carry a firearm? Why do you do these things? You know, why do you carry a firearm? Why are you concerned with the self-defense of your family or community? Why do you look out on the horizon for threats and concerns? Some of the motivations, the things that drive us to do these things, are not simply utility answers like patriotism. Sometimes, very oftentimes, if you dig deep enough and you ask a person with genuine conviction, they will tell you something different. I joined the war back in 2008 because I wanted to go to war. I wanted to see what it was like, and I wanted to prove to myself that I could become capable of something like that. And one would say, gasp, isn't that the antithesis of morality, to become capable of warfare? Well, we will have decades to figure that out if we continue on, but the reality of it and the decision was, I did not want to be engaging in the philosophy of violence without some semblance of understanding of it. And some of it, another part of myself, the motivation for it, was that I wanted to become something. And what I learned in the military is that the military cannot make you into something. It can only provide a pathway. Or it can only serve, more correctly spoken, it can only serve as a pathway to getting there. And that pathway should never be taken as guaranteed. So when you are considering the morality of the things that you do, particularly when it comes to just war theory, the rights of, or the idea of violence and the capabilities of violence, let me end with this encouragement that is matched with a warning. Do not lie to yourself about your intentions. Do not lie to yourself about your motivations, and do not neglect to consider why it is you do the things that you do. As you do so, be capable or concern yourself with parsing out what are your true motivations versus what are the justifications you even tell yourself. When I ask myself the question, why would I learn to become capable of violence? am I trying to convince myself of something that is against the conscience, or am I having to do the moral work, which requires courage, to consider why it is we hold these values so dear to our hearts, where it is that we ground this sense of morality, where it is, where, because where you ground your morality in the right to bear arms, if that is the phrase that you want to use, what you ground that morality in will have both mental, spiritual, and physical consequences in your life to come. If we ever find ourselves in a situation where we must, or we choose to use violence, and we choose to use violence for a justified cause, we should not take for granted the moral foundation upon that justification is grounded. I'll say that one more time. If we ever find ourselves in a situation where we must engage in violence, we should not take the moral justification, the moral foundation for that justification, for granted. Do not take for granted the moral foundation upon which that justification is grounded. And with that, we are going to close this episode of the Redacted Culture Cast. If you have enjoyed the show and you want to support us, you can head over to redactedculture.locals.com. There you can join us, you can support us, you can keep the lights running. If you want to pick up some of our gear, or the other way, another way to support us is to head over to redactedllc.com. You're going to find a couple more of our surprise friend teleportation hats in stock. We were able to secure another bolt of fabric. That being the case, go forth and conquer.